This is episode 375 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, March the 12th, 2012.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
This is an exciting day in the history of the NBN.
Copyright.gov is down. FBI.gov is next to go.
The world is in trouble. There is no Wikipedia.
Who here has an iPhone? Who here has a BlackBerry? Who here uses Gmail? Well, you're all screwed.
So we'll be monitoring this very closely. No one will pay for these rights if they can't find a way to make money off them.
Copyright is such a big issue. Legislation as 2006 is already outdated by the new technologies.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Today on the show, the world manages to survive two massive events this week. Firstly, the biggest solar flare for the past decade. And secondly, the launch of the next generation iPad. Now, it's just an iPad, not an iPad 3, just an iPad, which will no doubt be remembered in history as the iPad 3. Or the iPad 2, as you'll hear later in the show. Confused? Also today, for you lucky Optus customers, the telco is looking to serve ads to your mobile phone based on your location. Now there's one you didn't sign up for. And while we're talking Optus, they had a bit of a win over the penalty imposed on them last year for misleading advertising. After 8 years, three customers will finally roam onto Vodafone's network, and one has to ask why it took so long. That's three customers, not three phone users. There's the usual Oddspot gadget app and website of the week, computer news with Lena, and Adam's on the couch. So who needs cheap movie tickets when you can sit back and relax with us for the next 2 hours on Tech Talk Radio? First up, though, here's Dr. Ron with this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio news desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Apple unveils the iPad, Kony 2012 goes viral, solar flares could cause computer havoc, definitive agreements between NBNco and Telstra come into force, and the first LEGO space shuttle reaches outer space. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Apple has unveiled the third incarnation of its popular iPad tablet computer, calling it simply the iPad. Apple says the iPad has a resolutionary Retina-class display with four times the pixels than its predecessors. Apple also said it had already upgraded its stock applications to take advantage of the much higher resolution display. The new iPad has a dual-core A5X processor. It's a bit wider and a bit heavier, and includes a 5-megapixel backlit camera, which can record 1080p video. Running on iOS 5.1, the new iPad allows tethering to its 3G connection via Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, or USB. The popular voice recognition engine Siri, introduced in the iPhone 4S, has not been included in the new iPad. The new iPad supports 4G LTE mobile connectivity, but this appears to be aimed squarely at the United States. Many technology journalists have observed the 4G LTE chipset in the new iPad only works on two radio networks at 700 MHz and 2100 MHz at this stage, neither of which are used in Australia for 4G or LTE. The device can be used on existing 3G and HSDPA networks in Australia. Telstra and Optus have confirmed they will sell the device from this Friday, the 16th of March, while Vodafone has yet to confirm details of its sales plans. The new iPad will be priced from $539 to $759 in the Australian Apple Store, while models supporting mobile data network connectivity will be priced from $679 to $899. To other news this week, a YouTube video, which aims to raise awareness of atrocities attributed to a Ugandan guerrilla group leader, has gone viral, with over 70 million views since it was uploaded a week ago on Monday the 5th of March. According to its YouTube description, Kony 2012 is a film and campaign by an American charity called Invisible Children. It aims to make Joseph Kony famous, not to celebrate him, but to raise support for his arrest and set a precedent for international justice. Joseph Kony is the leader of the Lord's Resistance Army, or LRA, in Central Africa, a group reportedly notorious for abducting children and turning them into child soldiers. Joseph Kony is currently at large after being indicted for war crimes in 2005 by the International Criminal Court. The 30-minute YouTube production achieved 15 million views in just 3 days, and at the time of recording this week's Tech Talk News, had accrued over 70 million views in less than a week. News of the video is spread by social networks, social media, and mainstream media worldwide, but critics of the video say that it oversimplifies a complex issue, and many have questioned what the charity is hoping to achieve. Scientists have warned of further solar storms this week, which could result in disruption to satellite communications, including the GPS navigation system. Thursday last week saw one of the fastest coronal mass ejections, or CMEs, emerge from the Sun in recent years. The solar flare erupted from an active region on the Sun's surface that rotated into view on Saturday, the 3rd of March. Increased solar activity means more CMEs than usual. The effect on planet Earth includes auroras near the poles, as well as possible disruption to satellites, power stations, and electrical systems. The $11 billion definitive agreements between NBN Co. and Telstra came into force on Wednesday last week, removing one of the final impediments in the full-scale deployment of the national broadband network. A joint media release last week from Minister for Broadband, Senator Stephen Conroy, and Minister for Finance and Deregulation, Senator Penny Wong, said that full structural separation will be achieved when Telstra migrates its customers to the wholesale-only NBN and decommissions its copper network. Senator Conroy said the agreements would improve the efficiency in building the network, as NBN Co. would then have access to Telstra's pits, ducts, and exchanges. While Telstra will progressively shut down its copper network and migrate customers to the NBN, the telco will retain ownership of its HFC cable network and its 50% share in Foxtel. Telstra's Chief Executive Officer, Mr. David Thodey, said the agreements ended nearly 3 years of intense and complex negotiations with many parties. And a Romanian teenager and an Australian space buff have launched a space shuttle made of Lego building blocks into the stratosphere and captured the entire mission with a GoPro HD camera mounted beneath a weather balloon. The rig was launched from Germany, and the shuttle's flight was tracked via GPS. The payload was eventually found safe and sound more than 200 kilometres from where it took off. The 180-piece vessel was glued together to keep it intact and survived the 6-hour journey after reaching an altitude of 35 kilometres. Video from the GoPro camera has been posted on YouTube and received nearly 500,000 hits in its first week online. I'm Dr. on, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
It's unusual not having Andrew and Graham in studio at the same time.
Yeah.
Yes, this is the alternate universe version.
Maybe they're the same person.
Maybe they are the same person. Have they ever been seen in a photograph together? I'm Andrew, you're Ron, Adam's Graham, and
there's no Lena.
And there's no... No, that's...
Oh. Happy for them to argue about that, as long as they're arguing in the national interest.
They've made up all new ones because they're being innovative.
So any second now, she's going to go, ah, throw her hands in the air.
Epic
she
fail.
Has her money back.
I trust them as far as I can kick them.
The Honourable Senator Conroy.
And I'm now the amazing Lena Van Deventer.
I don't have a problem with that. The panellist formerly known as Graham Callaghan.
You foreigners with the air of foreign beer.
Much to Lena's horror.
It's the middle of the night, you owe some drug dealer $500.
Oh.
Like, dude.
I'm... Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
On Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. Graham and I are in this evening, so all will be good, won't it, Graham?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Sterling job last week, considering two of us flew the coop due to unforeseen circumstances.
Thank you very much. It was very exciting, a little bit nerve-wracking, but Lena and I were extremely pleased to see you both walk in here.
Yes.
You're happy to see the back of the panel as opposed to the front of the panel.
Oh, it's a comforting feeling being over this side, yes.
Dear. No, you did a sterling job. I was hospital side at the time. I was listening, and it was good. On the iPad too, would you believe?
Oh, you were streaming, were you?
Yes, I was listening off the stream whilst sitting there in the midst of suburban hospital type sort of thing. It was good. But anyway, glad to be back. It's all good.
No, we're glad
good to have you back.
Yes, yes.
No, what's, you're what just Lena saying said. That. Anyway, Graham's joined us again this evening too. He had other issues during the course of the week. It's glad to have him back now. So,
Thank you. It was a different experience listening to the show.
We should go away more often. It was entertaining, wasn't it?
No.
It was a very entertaining show, yes. I thought they did very well.
Ron's off on stress leave in the next few weeks. So he filed his leave application today. So, dear. So what's news this week? There was a big solar flare, is one thing, which was a bit of a non-event.
A coronal mass ejection.
Pardon me?
CME.
Ugh.
That's the technical term for it, yeah.
Well,
solar flares.
Jeff Dudley sent us across an email, a solar alert this evening, one of our listeners. I haven't logged into the chat yet. I'm getting there.
He did. Jeff's in the chat room tonight. He's mod.
Yes, he's mod. And the solar flares are getting big again. The southern lights, normally we have northern lights, they're coming south. And I think in his email, which I don't have in front of me, but I read earlier, he said that they were actually hitting Tassie. So if you're in Tasmania, like we go to Hugh and FM, don't we, Dr. Ron?
We do. Hello to everybody listening on
Hugh and FM. Hugh and FM. Look into the sky.
Look up.
Look up. Yes. That'd be an interesting experience, wouldn't it?
It certainly
anyone,
would be, yeah.
Anyone here in the studio
southern seen hemisphere, certainly.
Seen the northern lights in the southern hemisphere?
No, I haven't.
No, no, or in the northern hemisphere, no, for that matter.
The southern lights in the southern hemisphere.
Yeah, but they're called the northern lights, but they
in
come
the northern,
south.
No, they're not.
Okay.
No.
See, that's why he's
shinies.
Here. The what?
The shinies.
The Aurora Australis is what we're seeing down here. Ooh. Not the Aurora Borealis is the northern.
Ah, see?
See?
He knows.
Since we're into technical terms with your solar mass ejections.
Coronal mass ejections.
Thank you.
I've got wood. I need sheep.
I've got wood. I need sheep.
Have you seen Minecraft? That wonderful? No, no. That's Sheldon.
That's Big Bang Theory. Yes.
While he's playing Minecraft?
Is a Minecraft reference, though.
I need
yes.
wood without sheep is a Dr. On quote, I think.
Anyway.
Good old Minecraft.
Minecraft version 1.2.3 mm-hmm. for the win.
It has kitty cats.
It has got kitty cats.
Very exciting. What? It's got cats now.
Wild cats in the jungle.
Ocelots.
I see.
Very, very, very exciting.
I'm excited.
Did we ever get around to making that Minecraft nerd alert?
I was going to make one for Andrew so I could stick it under a button.
Which one?
For whom? Can you dig it?
Or for me or for Lena?
I've got one for Lena.
Have you?
Yeah.
Ooh. I've got a nerd alert.
You have?
My own nerd alert.
Your own nerd alert. Be a nerd and I'll play it.
Oh, there's a nerd about games?
Oh, yes.
Just in general?
When you go off.
Say something else about
when I go off?
Yeah.
Ocelots.
when you threaten whips and when you go off into car parks and
right,
stuff like
right.
that.
Right, I see. When you least expect it.
Ah, that's true. Yeah, exactly. Oh, dear. Where do we go to from here? The iPad 3.
No.
It's
the iPad.
The iPad 2.
No, the
iPad 2 is the old one.
The iPad 1.5.
No, just the iPad.
Why would it be 1.5? There's already a 2.
Ah, you ask
well,
a good question.
Well, why would it be the iPad when there's already an iPad 2?
Adam's going to confuse us immensely very shortly.
Oh, Adam's going to talk about Apple products. Can we not?
Oh, there you go.
He hates them, but yet uses
he
them.
He uses them.
Yes, but he still likes to be on both sides of the fence.
Well, he's informed.
Oh, there it is. I'm happy with that one. That's not quite a nerd alert, though.
No, it's not.
That's just violence.
Oh, really? It's violence, isn't it?
Violence is your bit of name.
No.
Yes, it is.
There you go.
Ow!
Well, she talked about whips.
I wasn't in here the night you brought in your whip.
No, you weren't. Luckily, too.
From what I understand.
Wasn't pretty.
No, that's right. Sorry, what were you saying about the iPad? 3, 2, 1, whatever. The iPad.
The new iPad.
Well, I'm looking forward to Adam's view, because he's written a couple of articles during the week. And I want to hear what he's got to say.
All right. All right. Well, yes, it's when I heard it come through, I thought, and hence my opening piece tonight, I thought, yes, it's very confusing why that they would just call it an iPad and rather than an iPad 3. Wouldn't it sequentially just move forward?
And wait for it. It's resolutionary.
Aha! Uh-huh. I see what you did there.
It wasn't me that did anything there.
Oh,
a lot of English
disgraceful
pedants.
Disgraceful abuse
yes,
of the English language.
English pedants around the world all were up in arms during the week when Apple came out with that one.
There we go.
Your say on Tech Talk Radio.
You got some correo for us this evening, Dr. Ron?
I've got lots and lots and lots of correspondence. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is how to communicate with us.
Yeah.
There's also the Tech Talk Radio contact form. You can hop onto our website, put any of your inquiries or feedback or messages into our state-of-the-art feedback form.
Yes, state-of-the-art. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. You type in the box there and you click submit.
Do you?
Most complex.
Is that how it works?
I think so.
Ah.
Lord Denning.
Who?
Lord Denning.
That's what I thought you said.
Via direct email to Dr. Ron says, apropos.
Says.
Apropos your discussion about a lady asking for a gentleman's hand in marriage on the 29th of February.
Oh, yes.
He does not have to say yes, but if he says no, he has to buy the lady a pair of gloves. Regards, Lord Denning.
Oh.
And I have to think, why?
I checked that and double-checked that, and Lord Denning is correct. That is the custom.
Whose custom?
The custom.
The. Everyone's. Oh. The global custom.
Really?
Not really.
Okay, I believe you.
Lewis, a.k.a. Newbie, via the contact form, says, "Hey, Tech Talk Radio Tech Talkers.
What's up?
Sup. I followed Graham's advice about the earphone dilemma. I used my in-ears at home and in the library, but used the Bud ones for walking and exercise. Problem solved. Just a small tech-related story," says Lewis. "The uni, UWA, which is where he studies, adopted a new lecture capture system this year, a new system where we listen to online lectures. Lecturers throughout the..." Lecturers?
Lecturers.
Those who are lecturous. Those who lecture.
Lecturers.
Leeches.
Oh. Lecturous lecturers throughout the university decided to disable the download link, which meant that only streaming was possible. Copyright reasons, asks Lewis. Fears of lecture distribution. I have no real idea why. Outrage and a backlash of complaints and anger. But the tech community of the university, i.e. the computer science students, came to the rescue. Within a day or two, a workaround was shared via Facebook, Twitter and forums. Simply by adding an extension to the URL, justice was restored. Listening to lectures at twice speed again is once more possible. Just a side comment, I'm listening to 2010 Tech Talk radio shows.
Oh my goodness.
A bit nerdy, I agree, but definitely missing the sound of the squeaky one. Cheers, Lewis.
Aww. That was pre-Lena.
When did you join us, Lena, on the panel?
October. Not the last October, the one before.
2010.
So this October will be my 2 years at Tech Talk.
When you get to October, Lewis, the squeaky chair will be rolled in.
Yeah, it was the episode after our 300th episode it was my first episode here.
It was. Mm. You came in for the 300. You were a tourist.
I did. I watched.
A terrorist.
Not quite a terrorist.
No.
There was cake.
She threatened to come back. She brought good cake. And she's in. See, that's what you do in this industry.
She brings cake.
Bribery and corruption gets you everything.
Carl, who wrote in last week.
It's gone quick, hasn't it?
Criticising us for criticising Vodafone, says, "Hi team, in what must be an iPad 3 or iPad HD dominated show." So Carl's written this before the big announcement. I should have added one more dot point to my defence of Vodafone. Oh, this was Carl who wrote us in with the bullet points in the feedback.
Yep.
Their reception might be getting better, but their customer support is appalling, with one of the most frustrating call centres I've ever dealt with. I guess life is all about balance. Cheers, Carl.
I know. See? All call centres have their own negativity to them, I've come to the conclusion, whether it's inbound or outbound.
Well, it's always going to be a negative experience, really, isn't it? Because you're calling up because you have a problem. So it's never going to be entirely rosy, is it?
I have an issue with an insurance provider at the moment, and I've chosen not to renew my policy. Ooh. And the way I chose not to renew my policy was to actually not pay the policy. And now I'm being hunted and stalked, and they ring. Even when Dr. Ron, we were having a technological experience over lunch today, and they were pestering. So stop it if you're an 07. Leave me alone.
On a public holiday too.
Well, it might not have been up there, but it was down here. It wasn't Adelaide. It was here.
Mm.
CityLink in Melbourne's got a good call centre, good customer service. I can say this because...
I can only assume that's irony.
It is irony, yes, because it's perfectly factual. I tried to ring them last week on their advertised number and I got a recorded message saying, "CityLink's busy at the moment. It can't answer your call. Thanks for calling," and hung up on me.
Oh.
Sort of like that.
Not even enough lines to keep you on hold.
No. And then I emailed them and I got an out-of-office reply saying, "CityLink doesn't respond to emails at the moment."
Was it a public holiday out of curiosity?
No.
Oh. Well, let's shot that one down.
This might take 5 to 7 weeks to answer this email if it's urgent.
Sorry,
calls.
How long?
5 to 7 weeks, I think, was in their out-of-office.
Unbelievable.
Appalling.
So what, the cleaner does it when they finish up at night? I'll do a couple of emails
cleaner
before
does
I go.
It. I don't think even the cleaner.
Well, good one, CityLink.
Michael, via the feedback form, says,
"Hi, Michael.
Lots of curry this week."
Oh, there's lots and lots. "Hi, all. Been listening for over 6 months now and love your show, in particular the way you cover local IT and telco issues that other shows cannot even begin to understand, not mentioning anyone, Leo."
Oh, he just mentioned him.
Who's Leo?
Don't know. That actor guy.
He's that actor.
I remember Paul Hogan.
Oh, in front of the Titanic.
Yeah, that
one. Yeah, I'm with you.
I remember Paul Hogan's Leo. He was great. He did stunts in front of cars.
Don't say his last name, though.
I'm not.
It's a G-rated time
slot. I like the way he got things out of trees.
The other week, you were talking about telco mobile coverage maps and how they're not worth the bits of paper they're printed on. Well, I have
or the pixels.
The pixels. Well, I have an idea that I would hope the telcos would provide us on these maps, towers, rather than just showing us the coverage they hope you get. Why don't they show us the Optus, Vodafone or Telstra towers in the area? Not necessarily the same map, but that would be nice. Then at least you could have a better idea if you can use your phone if you walk inside your home. He goes on to say, loves the show, would love the occasional video sorry, would love the occasional show videoed as a video podcast.
I settle.
Like that Leo guy. Cheers, Michael. By the way, I work as a contractor for Telstra. However, I use Optus mobile services.
Ooh. Mm.
Michael, check out the following website. We've had this as a website of the week. Cellsite, cellsite.nudge.id.au.
We have, and that's a really good...
Yeah, I'll put that in the show notes
for you. Is it current? Have you been there recently, Dr. Ryan?
I have, and it is current. It's a Google mashup experiment, and it overlays data from the ACMA database on top of Google Maps.
That's might be the regulatory service here in Australia that, yeah, that allocates spots
it might be what
for people, like telcos, to put phone towers up.
Thanks for the feedback, Michael. A regular contributor, GJMCN, via the contact form, says... Oh, it goes on for some length. I've cut down GJ's email a little bit. We'll have more next week, GJ. He says, given the big push by everyone to incite Twittering and Facebooking, it is really time to start looking at the bad and the ugly of these social networking solutions. Read the Facebook float... The CIA will be rich. Does anyone know how much and what value the CIA's Facebook investment stock will be worth when the IPO occurs?
Oh.
Conspiracy hat.
He's got his conspiracy hat
on. Tinfoil hat.
Last but certainly not least, that's Ronnie of the TikTok Radio contact form says, hi, just loved Lena's comments regarding the consumer preview of Windows 8.
Yeah. Have you had a play yet?
No, but based on your experiences, I'm not even going to go anywhere near
terrible.
It.
You thought Vista was bad.
And I thought, oof, you were a Mac user.
I am a Mac user, but I still
fanboy
have a look.
Girl. What did you load it up on? Come on.
VMware.
Okay.
It may work on a tablet, but on a desktop, it's a disaster blaster.
Yep.
I will never say Vista... is terrible again.
Yep.
Windows 8 now takes the crown. Definitely will not be downgrading to it. Regards, Ronnie.
It was pretty bad. And was it Michael who was talking about webcams? We used to do that.
Webcams.
Yeah, we used to do that in the past life.
Someone wants a video podcast. That was Michael.
We got enough to do audibly. Don't give us video tasks to do on this show, for
Michael,
goodness sake.
It's a full-time job for eight people just doing what we do
and
now.
And then I'll have to put makeup on and...
Yeah, I know.
You're not the only one.
Well, lucky
and
I'm
and I'll have to go and put
pajamas.
A paper bag on my head, so...
Oh, dear.
Oh, no.
I am.
You won't have to do that.
Is that you in that automotive ad I've seen on telly? I'm not going to mention the brand name. Screen.
No.
No? Okay.
Don't know. I don't know what you're talking about, actually.
Oh, you must obviously not watching commercial television.
No.
Good. Well done, that man.
Yes.
We'd have to
told you that. I haven't got an antenna plugged in.
We'd have to have not put our pyjamas on when we come in if we had
video.
Oh,
no.
I'll have to wear pants.
Yeah. Can't do that. I'm a freelancer. Can't wear pants.
We don't pay you to wear pants.
No.
Your retainer is... No.
Pants exempt.
How's the Cora going there, Dr.
Oh, look, I think that's well and truly enough. If you'd like to communicate with us, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
Yes, and that was your say. So what's next in the rundown and scheme of things? Probably something like this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Now, we were talking a little bit about this solar storm. Everyone really ramped it up and thought it was going to be a really whiz-bang, over-the-top thing. I remember even seeing on the BBC website, I think I tweeted it during the course of the week, that it was one of those ones that was going to potentially upset space communications and
we
take
got a
out power grids.
And Y2K about it.
We did, didn't we? We didn't we? But anyway, reports in suggest that it wasn't anywhere near as extensive and as big as had occurred. But looking back... The sun has an 11-year cycle, and you see these great animations and real photography and stuff like that come out of NASA and those organisations showing us of these big solar flares. It's
sunspot cycle.
It is. It is. But something that I learned during the course of the week, because I had a, not me personally, but one of my members of my family had a stay in hospital, I was talking to a radiologist.
Oh, yes.
And did you know...
Someone who studies radios.
Yeah, they well, passing radio waves through you.
Oh.
That type of person. They take black and white snaps.
Ah.
But I learned during the course of the week that if you fly high in an aircraft, very high, like as in international travel, you'll get considerably more dosage of radiation than you will in an X-ray. Did you know that?
Yes, I did.
Oh, good. Well, I'm the only one who didn't. I did. I thought that was fascinating. I said, oh, so you get up, the higher you go into the big thing up there, the sky,
The big thing.
The big blue,
the blue
thing.
Yeah. The more you've...
well, that makes sense.
Yes, because you're protected from some of that radiation by the Earth's magnetic field. And if you get up high above more and more, the higher you get up in that magnetic field, the less protection it offers you.
Hmm. So how would you be being an airline pilot or people that are exposed long-term to those sort of radiations, especially when the sun lets off one of its big ones?
Do they take iodine or something like that? Does that do anything?
I don't know.
I don't think it's that big a risk. I think it's
storm in a teacup, you reckon?
Yeah. It's a it's a bigger dose than an X-ray or something like that, but because we're talking about such small numbers and small doses anyway, that the risk is minimal.
Well, apparently there's a scale that scientists measure these radiation explosions from the sun, and it's a Graham scale.
Is it?
A G scale from 1 to 5.
There you okay. go.
1 being the
you're famous.
Least, and the G, the 5 being the most. And this scored G1 on the Richter scale, on the Graham scale.
The G scale.
Yeah.
So, I don't want a scale.
You've got enough going on in your life.
Probably, yeah, probably.
Mod in our chat room says, unfortunately, CME1...
What's CME?
Coronal mass ejection.
Oh, you were doing that before.
Missed us by a whisker. He doesn't... Why was that? This is that unfortunate mod. I thought that would have been fortunate that it missed us by a whisker.
That must have been a plume that came across and would cause northern lights or this aurora borealis, as I've heard this evening.
Well, he says CME2 is coming tomorrow night, so there's still a little bit more to
come. So that will be Tuesday night our time. So depending on where you're listening to, you might have missed it.
Might have just missed it, or it might be happening.
So what happens? Will it just give good northern lights as it goes across the magnetic field of the Earth?
Depends on how serious it is. It could have other effects. It could have effects on the power distribution network. It could have effects on communications. It could, in particular, affect long-range shortwave communications, where they're still used. It could affect aircraft communications, I believe. Those sorts of things.
The important thing, will it make zombies come to life?
Extremely.
That's a full
unlikely.
Moon, isn't it?
No, that's werewolves.
Oh, sorry, I'll get my facts straight.
Will it make zombies come to life?
No.
Good. Then chill, everyone.
Excellent. Now, while we're talking about NASA, unless anyone else has anything they'd like to chip in about solar radiation.
Well, Warlock said that the findings from the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition did a paper in 2009... that the Harvard School of Public Health and the American Cancer Society looked at the relationship of DNA damage in airline pilots and the potential protective effects of dietary and supplemental antioxidants. The findings were that high combined antioxidants from food and supplements decreased DNA damage from higher exposure to ionizing radiation in airline pilots. So there you go.
Thanks, Warlock.
Maybe they do take tablets to help them from getting too much radiation.
Or they
radiation.
Just eat more whatever's got antioxidants in it.
Yeah.
Eat more carrots.
That'll work.
Drink lots of tea.
Well, they get recycled air in the front of the cockpit. Why don't they have a lead-encased cockpit as well?
You wouldn't be able to see out of it, Andrew.
Ah, see? That's why you're here, Graham.
And it would be too heavy.
Why don't they make the whole plane out of the stuff the black box is made out of?
Well, yeah, there's another story in its own, isn't it? Whilst we're on the subject of NASA news, which Dr. Ron Clark, actually, he didn't touch on this last week, so I thought we'll drag it out this week, because this was quite funny.
No, I didn't.
Apparently, a laptop got nicked recently from NASA.
Yep.
And it was unencrypted. And guess what was on that was on the laptop that could have fallen into the wrong hands?
Credit card
the
details.
The truth about Roswell.
What?
I like that. They're all good conspiracy theories. But no, the control codes for the International Space Station.
Oh, yeah.
So it really would be, if you've seen the episode of The Big Bang Theory where the guys, you know, impress the girl by taking it and driving the Mars lander, this could really happen with the International Space Station.
That's ridiculous.
No. The agency's...
That would be so cool. You could drive the
Whoever's
space
got
station
that
around.
Table. Yeah. The agency's Inspector General, Paul Martin, made the revelation in cybersecurity-related testimonial before a committee of the U.S. House of Representatives. So they came clean. Martin says that NASA reported 48 agency mobile computing devices either lost or stolen in the past 2 years, up to April 2011, including the machine containing the sensitive code. So, obviously, there's been a few others gone missing too in its time.
So would you have to be on the space station to use that code?
I don't know. I don't think they're going to let you know on that secret.
Or is there damage you could do from down here?
With a decent radio transmitter.
Yes.
Because there's always someone on the ISS, isn't there?
There are people on the ISS at the moment. That's right. NASA's not running any more shuttles up to it. They're using Russian Soyuz rockets, I think, to get
people. Yes, they've almost finished building it, and they've made it obsolete, yes.
Well, will they notice the
on your NASA.
The little, what are they called?
Coronal mass ejections. I'm going to get everybody saying that by the
CME
program.
CMEs. Will they notice the CMEs from up there?
Well, they would, yes.
Would it hurt them in any way?
They might have to take some precautions.
Yes, for their equipment. Yes.
Batten down the hatches.
Not only for their equipment, but for themselves, yes.
For themselves?
Yeah.
And grab their inanimate carbon rod.
It won't be as bad as it would have been for the Apollo astronauts who were transiting between Earth and the Moon, because they were well and truly outside the Earth's magnetic field, whereas the low Earth orbit where the space station is still a little protected by the Earth's magnetic field.
Mm.
There you go.
Very good.
Can't believe that was unencrypted.
No. No, exactly.
Very silly.
And another funny thing that I saw during the course of the week, not that it was funny actually, it was rather interesting, is that there's some malware doing the doing the rounds at the moment, you know, the nasty thing that comes onto some computers and tries to do things.
Before Mod says that they have a shielded room to go to on the space station in the event of solar radiation.
That's fascinating.
Which is handy, yeah.
So inbound, so incoming.
Your lead box you were talking about.
A bunker.
See?
Yes.
In I was on the right track.
You were.
A bunker in the sky. Love it.
So, and you just want to make sure that the life support systems and the lights stay on, really, don't you, as the thing passes?
Something like that.
Yeah. During the course of the week, these little people that send out nasty things to computers, otherwise known as viruses and malwares and things like that, Kaspersky Research came out and said there's a new one doing the traps.
This is really interesting.
Called DuQ. Is that how you pronounce it? D-U-Q-U?
I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's an interesting story, yeah.
Anyway, apparently the payload, which is the bit in the virus that does the deed, is written in an unknown programming language.
Yeah.
Now, that in itself is interesting because I would have thought that any malware antivirus type sort of protection company, such as Kaspersky, would be across all the tricks of the trade. And they've come across this one, which has stumped them.
Yeah, and there's quite an active research community, as you might imagine, that's despite the commercial interest, still relatively collaborative. So it won't be just Kaspersky that'll be stumped by this. All the others, Norton and the likes. If the others knew how it worked, then the people at Kaspersky would have found out about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is really interesting. There's somebody writing code in a language that isn't generally known.
But obviously can be executed on a particular machine.
Yeah, now it could be somebody who's developed or their own programming language, their own high-level language, or it could be some top secret thing that's not known about it. Yeah, it's an interesting story.
Absolutely.
For those who don't understand, computer programs aren't written in the instructions that your computer directly understands, which is called machine code. What you generally do is you write the program in a higher level language that's easier for humans to understand.
Plain speaky type of language.
Somewhere in between, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you compile it and convert it in effect into the lower level language that the computer understands. And that process leaves evidence behind in the code of what's been going on. So You can then go backwards and work out that if the compiled code looks like this, then it must have been written in that language and so on.
Must have been written in .NET or must have been written in...
Or C++ or something whatever. Like that, yeah.
But they haven't picked this one.
No. So
is it safe to say the hackers are actually now writing their own language? Well, some clever ones are, obviously. Some 14-year-olds from Indonesia, maybe.
Well, you don't quite know what the history is. It could be a... It could be that this particular bit of code originates in some commercial organisation or even in some government organisation, and it's been attached to something that is worm-like that spreads it around. The various components of a worm don't necessarily all have to have come from the same place, or even have been originally intended to be distributed as a virus or a worm. So it's always more complicated than it would initially appear, but yeah, there's something interesting going on there, that's for sure.
Yeah. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McCollum, that's me. Graham Callaghan is who you just heard. Lena and Ron are in the studio, and we're going to take a break. And if I remember the right buttons to push, Ron, you might have to give me a hand over here in case I don't do the right ones.
Come over there, show you how it's done.
I'll try this one, shall I?
listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Oh, what does this button do? Hello, everybody.
But I buck the trend on the hive mind that is Tech Talk Radio.
Which is patently absurd.
It is absurd, exactly right.
But anyway, my point is...
moving along.
My point is...
And why do you have to change the phone number?
That's a good question, Dr. Ron. Why?
If they're that clueless, they should not be answering the phone.
I can't see a blue tin. I can't see a blue tin.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio, it's everywhere you need it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. You're joining us live, maybe, if you're in the chat, chat.techtalkradio.com.au, where you can interact with us all whilst we're chatting. And there's a bit of goings on there during the break.
Or you might be listening on one of the fine community radio stations anywhere around the country or around the world, or you might be listening on the podcast.
You might be.
On your own private little MP3 player.
You got an email during the course of the week, didn't you, Dr. Ron, about someone listening on the podcast and discovering the high-quality version?
I can't remember that one.
I thought you said someone had... Yeah, I know you get lots of emails. I think you said someone had discovered the big show download one, which lives next the next button across.
Oh, vaguely, yes. Yes, someone had discovered
the stereo version and with...
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you're right.
With the music in it and all that sort of stuff.
I know you.
Yeah. It's been a long week.
Either Ron or I, mostly it's me. Last week it was Ron. Work hard to make that stereo version sound good.
Yeah.
Exactly, yes. It's a bit of a bigger download.
It's intended for the other stations that play the show.
Radio stations, yeah.
So podcasters don't download that, but it sounds good.
Yeah. If you've got lots of bandwidth and you've got lots of space on your iPod, then... don't download that one.
Okay. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is another place where you can come to send us emails and stuff like that. Fill up the mailboxes. We all see them. Whether we choose to respond to them is depending on our work commitments at the time. But sometimes the better ones get read out on the air. So come along and say good day, which is... good. Now, Lena.
Yeah.
Do you want to have a go or should we go to the couch first? What should we do? This is Rundown on the Road.
I can go now.
All right. Well, let's have a go now then.
Pew, pew.
Tech Talk Games with Lena Van Deventer.
That's me.
It is you.
Woohoo.
Yeah.
You know how last week, I think it was, we were speculating on Valve bringing out some hardware?
Yes.
And we're getting very excited at the thought that they might be making some kind of console called the Steam Box.
Yeah.
Well, ba-bow.
No?
There's no Steam Box coming.
No sweat
Valve
box.
Valve have come out and said gamers hoping to get their hands on the rumored Steam Box will need to postpone their excitement for quite some time.
Oh.
Valve have come out and told Kotaku, a games media site, today that the company is a long way from shipping any sort of hardware. Aww. The company admitted it was building boxes, but their immediate purpose was for testing the company's Steam Big Picture user interface mode. Now that's
it's not designed for resale or for release.
That's a mode. They were just building the boxes to test this Big Picture user interface mode that allows users to play Steam games on a PC that's connected to a television.
Ah.
So it's testing a UI on a larger screen. Ooh. Pew, 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 pew. Is that for me?
That's for you.
They've said they're always putting boxes together, going all the way back to Half-Life 1. They put special boxes together to test the software render. So it's all just a normal part of the development. People got too excited and I was one of them. And now I'm disappointed.
Oh.
But in good news from Valve, the business magazine Forbes finds Valve to be valued in the billions. Leader Gabe Newell's net worth is estimated to be at least $1.5 billion just on his own. So that's pretty good. They're worth about $3 billion, Valve are. So if they want to make hardware at any point. I think they're in a position where they can. Money is not tight. I've also talked a little while ago about the next Xbox maybe having a Blu-ray player in it because it doesn't have Blu-ray capabilities like the PS3 does. But now there's rumors going around about it not having a disc drive at all.
Oh, really? They're going to go down the Apple line of things, are they, and remove the optical disc altogether?
Well, yeah, they're not sure whether it'll be proprietary or a common format like SD, but they want to have some sort of solid-state card storage thing going on. So I don't know whether that's a good way to go, considering Xbox isn't really cheap with their little interchangeable add-ons and whatnot. If you've got one of the original Xboxes, you'll know that just to enable it for Wi-Fi would cost you about $150 to get the Wi-Fi add-on.
If you buy Sony's PlayStation, it's all inbuilt.
It is, yeah, it is. And
yeah, but they all come with their own, you know, rods to bear.
Mm, they do, they do. But
Ron,
the Xbox...
Ron powered up the PlayStation 3 today, actually, and we thought, oh, here we go. We're going to do a 10-gig download or something like that. But no, we got away with it today.
Because we didn't plug in an internet cable.
Well, there you go. But see, they all have their own issues, and obviously Xbox has theirs.
Yeah, but buying a replacement hard drive for your Xbox or an additional hard drive to your Xbox will set you back hundreds and hundreds of dollars. Just because they can. Because it's all proprietary.
Is it?
Yeah, it's all proprietary.
So you can't just pop down the local computer shop and pick up a 2-terabyte drive and bung it in?
No.
Oh, really?
No. So going for the SD card
type route. Is that across all games? Sorry, I don't mean to digress. But is that the same for the PlayStation?
No, PlayStation can put external hard drives onto it.
Okay, yeah. But it's just Xbox. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Microsoft.
Yeah, so it's...
There's a buying criteria.
I'm not too thrilled with the fact that they might be going that way. I'd prefer to see them going the Blu-ray disc route myself, but we'll see. It's all rumor and scuttlebutt and all that, so it's not really actually been said by Microsoft yet. I don't think they've commented. No, as of press time, Microsoft had not responded to requests for comment. So obviously it's a lot of speculation and rumor and whatnot, but that's what the games industry is fueled by. So that's what many industries are fueled by. Mass Effect 3 came out a little while ago. The last week or so, they've already shipped 3.5 million copies.
Wow. What platform?
All of them? A bit of everything.
Yep.
Yeah.
What's it about?
Commander Shepard in space. Pew, pew, pew. Whatnot.
Oh.
Yeah. That's pretty much it. It's another shooty bang.
Space cowboy shoot 'em up sort of game, is it?
Yeah.
As if we haven't got enough of those, but obviously we don't.
Well, there's Shooty Bang, Shooty Bang 2, Shooty Bang 3, Son of Shooty Bang. It's all that sort of stuff. But they do say that they do have an emphasis on narrative and whatnot. But yeah, they're shipping a lot of games. That doesn't actually have how many have sold. That's just how many have shipped. So that'll be interesting to see. But it will be a massive, massive release. People are very, very excited about it. In other news, Mortal Kombat on the Vita has been banned in Australia. Refused classification.
Oh.
While we wait for our R18 rating a little bit more, yet another game is banned. Now, Mortal Kombat on other platforms was banned a few months ago, and now the Vita version has been banned as well. Sony were saying that Warner Brothers submitted the game for classification on the basis that the console's smaller screen would reduce the impact of the game's violence. And the classification board.
Well, you can still see it, but
really.
It's smaller.
Yeah, it's smaller, so it's not as immersive.
Yeah, it doesn't quite.
I was going to ask you why the platform even entered into it.
Yeah, the classification board of Australia said
they tried.
Yeah, so it's we're still waiting for that R18 classification.
So Warner Brothers have made the application to the review committee, saying, mm-hmm. "Can we get a different rating for this platform, please, because it's
the screen's smaller and stuff,
and you don't see as much blood per square inch.
Like, it's smaller than your face,
What? Nice try, Warner Brothers.
Yeah, would think that a movie, whether you see it on an IMAX screen or on your iPhone, will have the same classification. Why would a video game be any different?
It's depicting the same thing, regardless of how good the details are.
Mm. It's worth a shot, but it is worth a shot, because if people can't get a game they want on their big screen, but they can on their smaller screen, they're going to buy it. So they're definitely not getting any sales in Australia. Well, not
legit sales.
Yeah, not legally. Yeah. Of the original game, so maybe they'll give it a crack on it. It is worth a shot, I think, because if you can't get it the other way, you'll get it this way. But in exciting news that I found the most exciting thing about this week, with the Game Developers Conference was on just after last week, which was annoying because I couldn't talk about it very much. But the most exciting thing to come out of GDC this year, for me, was that SimCity is coming back.
I like SimCity.
SimCity was amazing.
I wasted a lot of time on SimCity.
I
wasted a lot of time playing SimCity as well. Yep. One of the very first version, I think.
Yeah.
Used to click and drop the little police stations and fire stations.
Roads,
train lines.
Maybe it's gone green. Any news on what it is?
Yeah,
is it gone green?
Residential zones and commercial zones and industrial zones.
It's made by the same people, which is great. It means that, you know, it's in good hands, the people who originally made it. So it's Maxis, who also do The Sims through EA. It's made with the new Glassbox game engine.
What does that
which
mean?
Which enables the studio to introduce curved roads to the franchise.
Oh, okay.
So it's not a grid anymore. It'll be fully 3D.
Oh, is that good or bad in the game?
I think that's good.
Really?
That's good.
Give you a headache while you build your town. What's going to be the 3D part about it? The buildings growing up? Is it literally, do they extrude them off?
Well, you can probably, it's probably all in just the way that you can maneuver around your city. So the way that you, where the camera is, basically.
You control objects in three dimensions. So instead of just having a bird's eye view of the map, you can actually, you know, zoom in and out and rotate around buildings and...
Wonder if it'll add anything to it. I guess it will. If you've never known the first one, you probably go, wow, this is great. But the first one was very... I enjoyed the first one.
It was simple, wasn't it?
It was, and I think simplicity in video games is good, but that's just me.
One of the most exciting parts as well is that one of the monsters has been announced. Giant lizard.
Oh, can you say Godzilla?
You can say Godzilla. Okay. I think you can say Godzilla, but it's pretty obvious where they're going with that one. So giant lizard will be one of the monsters that you can unleash on your city. It'll be interesting to see what other ones there were. What was there when I used to play? Spider? There was a giant spider.
I'm sure there was a giant lizard in
I think there was a giant lizard in the first
one,
too.
Yeah, you had natural disasters as well, didn't you? Yep. Hurricanes and floods.
Tornadoes,
yeah.
They were horrible.
Yeah,
they used to drop out of nowhere.
That's right.
It's all coming back to me now. You're right, actually. There were tornadoes and it'd destroy. Mm-hmm. You like living in Kansas. It's a twister.
What? Earthquakes.
Did we have earthquakes?
Earthquakes were bad. The whole thing would shake.
And then fires used to break out.
Yeah, because of the earthquake. Yeah.
Oh.
Probably all the gas pipes would burst and everything. Mm.
And so, floods. And the pipes used to burst. That's right. All the water would come up through the
ground. Well, I'm wondering if it lets you choose where you build, whether you choose somewhere like, you know, New Zealand or, you know, Los Angeles or something like that, or you can go somewhere more stable.
On a fault
line. If you want a bit of extra adventure, build on a fault line.
They could do some really cool stuff with it because
Tornado Alley.
How open world our games are these days and how we have massive universes. For Minecraft, for example, is a massive universe of little worlds.
Can you play multiplayer on this? Like, you know, two of you build a city, like you look after one suburb and I'll look after the other suburb? That'd be an interesting challenge, wouldn't it?
Don't think there's anything in this particular release that I'm looking at.
Sorry, we'll stop giving them ideas.
But it would be amazing to be able to do that. I don't think it would be too hard to actually
have a cooperative server going.
Yeah.
So you've got someone looking after law and order and you've got someone looking after produce and all that.
I think it'd be a good team effort, wouldn't it? Yeah, in this day and age, having a multiplayer server wouldn't be crazy. It's almost expected, I'd imagine. You want to be able to play with your friends and do that kind of stuff together, like in Minecraft as well, how you can jump on a multiplayer server and everyone makes their own stuff and has their own sort of job. So, but I'm really looking forward to that. That's coming in 2013.
Oh, so it's a way off yet?
Yeah, still a little way off, but they'll drip feed us information as we go on to make us more and more excited before the release. But
it's a bit like watching Peter Jackson's teasers of the new Lord of the Rings stuff.
Yeah.
That's 2013 too.
Mm. So that'll be very exciting. That was the most exciting thing to come out of GDC for me.
Wow.
I could get back into SimCity.
Yeah, I could too, I reckon. Yeah.
I think if they really do this well, it'll be an homage and a love letter to all the people who've ever played it.
Mm.
Which would be great.
It was a few years ago now when the first one came out.
Yeah.
When we were playing that, early 90s?
Yeah, I think it was on a TRS-80 or something, wasn't it? No, it wasn't quite that, but it was colour.
Yeah, it was colour. I was on a PC.
Early PCs, isn't it?
286 or something.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it should be good.
Yeah,
I'll definitely be playing that one.
Yes.
Not just one.
No?
Probably four. You probably need a few.
Oh, well, maybe Steam will get another visit from me at some stage in the near future, in 2013.
Steam may not carry it.
Oh.
No, because it's EA, it may be Origin only.
Okay, so that means you have to go to the shop and buy it, do you? Or go to a specific shop and download it?
You may need to go to Origin, which is EA's version of Steam.
Oh, okay.
To get that one.
Yes, closed shop type sort of
it
stuff.
It might be, but that's just me guessing. But
no, it's a good guess. Good guess.
Warlock in our chat room says his first SimCity was on the Commodore 64.
Oh, wow. That is going
showing
back.
Showing your age, Warlock.
That's definitely going back.
Do you remember? There were some really good video games. Remember the was it the Vectrex they used to have? They used to have Androids and stuff like that. It was the first vector-based console. I remember a mate of mine used to have one, and it was just its own unique operating system and used to play Asteroids on it. You know how Asteroids was a vector-based game?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, I think they called it the Vectrex. So there's things like that. Really early computer games that were just, I don't know, they'll be in a museum somewhere now.
Yep. There are many museums around for video gaming nostalgia. Sure.
Andrew has just revealed that he is very old.
Yeah. Yep. No, they were good. It's like the Commodore 64, that was around the same time too. So Warlock's very old too in our chat.
Well,
careful who you call old, Greg.
As long as you've got buddies.
Yeah, correct.
Sorry.
That's all right. So, yeah, anything else?
No, I think that's pretty much it that I've got
good.
At the moment.
I like the SimCity news. I reckon that's really cool.
That's what rocked my socks.
Yeah. Yeah. Will it play on the iPad?
No, it said PC and Mac what they're developing for at the
damn.
Moment. There may be an iOS version, I'm sure. Like, there would have to be a dumbed-down version that they could put on platforms that don't require...
You could use an RDP client to play on your PC on your iPad.
Because that would be the best place to play something like that.
It
because
would,
you could pinch
screen.
And squeeze and move around and then drop something here, drop something there, and you could take it with you into small rooms of the house and then go and sit on the couch with it afterwards. You could take the game with you.
I've got a gadget of the week specially for you, if that's what you want to do.
You'll just have to wait.
Ooh.
Find out what it is.
The gadget. All right.
It's not an iPad, is it?
It's not an iPad.
No.
It could be used in conjunction with an iPad.
You can upgrade, Lena? Go from the 2 to the to the iPad?
No. I'm not. I'm happy with my 2.
Oh.
It would
I'm
have
not
to
gonna
be
upgrade
pretty
either.
Amazing.
Well, you haven't got anything to upgrade anyway.
That's right.
So how can you
just
upgrade?
I thought I'd be clear.
Darn tootin'.
But will Adam upgrade?
No.
It's resolutionary.
Boom, boom.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Dearie me.
Not as good the second time.
It's not.
No, and it was pretty bad the first time.
It's pretty bad, like the 70th time you've heard it in a few days.
I want to hear what Adam's got to say. Adam will have something to say about
this. He will. And he'll confuse everybody.
No, he won't.
Adam,
sure?
Adam never confuses me.
Adam will bring clarity.
Oh, okay. We'll see what he does.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
I'm wondering if we'll cast aside our old tablets for the iPad 3, the way we currently cast aside our smartphones. Yes, I know it's not called the iPad 3. I look forward to your angry letters. Nor is it the iPad 4G or the iPad HD or the iPad Lite or the iPad Classic. Apple has decreed it's just the plain old iPad, which I think is a bit of a marketing screw-up, really. Apple's the master of whipping up hysteria about new products, but that becomes a lot harder when you don't have a new name or number to focus on. The number 3 would have looked great on billboards and bus stops, but now you've just got the iPad. Unless Cupertino sends around the legal ninjas, for now I'm going to call Apple's new super-duper numberless wonder tablet the iPad 3. And I expect everyone else will as well once the fuss dies down. This time last year, I was pretty underwhelmed by the iPad 2. Apart from adding cameras, it didn't address any of the original iPad's shortcomings. Apple basically gave us more of the same, except thinner and faster, even though no one was complaining that the first iPad was fat and slow. I already had my iPad 1 shipped over from California, thanks Lid, and it was meeting my needs, so I saw no reason to upgrade, just like I don't see a reason to buy a new car every year. This year's new model iPad has a lot more to offer, plus it's had a price cut. I'd say this is the true iPad 2 after last year's iPad 1.5. One selling point is access to LTE mobile broadband on the Wi-Fi 4G models, although unfortunately Australians have been left in the lurch. The iPad supports LTE at 700 and 2100 MHz, but Telstra offers our only LTE network at the moment, and that's running at 1800 MHz. Optus and Vodafone are getting ready to offer LTE, so we'll have to wait and see if the iPad 3 gets any love. For now, all these tablets can fall back on HSDPA anyway, and I expect most people can wait for LTE in the iPad 4, which could support 1800 anyway. So I guess the new iPad's killer feature is the upgrade to the high-res Retina display, with a similar leap in display quality to when the iPhone 4 usurped the iPhone 3GS. The pixel density on the iPhone 4 is still higher than the iPad 3, but you're likely to hold an iPad a bit further from your face, so I don't see this as being a major problem. If you're an iGadget lover, I expect the iPad 3's Retina display will be love at first sight. Yet whether you can justify upgrading for a sharper display depends on how you use your current iPad. If you just occasionally check your email and browse the web, then you might not care too much about the Retina display. If that's the case, you probably don't care too much about the A5X dual-core processor either and the quad-core graphics. But if your iPad is your constant companion for work and play, more grunt and extra pixels could be hard to resist. even if you've already coughed up for the first two iPads. This is where it gets interesting. Most people tend to buy smartphones on a plan from their telco, so they get what feels like a free phone every 2 years. But they buy their tablets outright, cash up front. Thanks to the telcos, we're in the habit of getting a new smartphone every year or two, even if the old one is still up to the job. But will this upgrade cycle extend to tablet ownership if it means we have to hand over a wad of cash? People have tightened their wallets post-GFC, so are they going to replace something which still does the job? I guess we're about to find out. To me, I think one of the things that Apple and the other tablet makers have done is to personalize these devices to the point where it's really hard to share them even with family and friends. There's no fast user switching on a tablet, and that's not by accident. They want you to feel that it's your tablet. And so if you're sick of sharing your iPad 2 with your family, you'll give them the iPad 2 even though it's still a perfectly good tablet and go out and buy an iPad 3. Bingo, baby. You're on the upgrade cycle.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Yeah. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I like the upgrade cycle.
Yeah, it's not bad.
I like new things.
But then again,
bring on the technology.
You go through cars quite a bit, don't you?
No.
Okay.
I had two cars in my life.
Well, there you go. And how many iPads have you had? Two. One.
One.
And you're going for your second soon?
No.
No? Okay.
But so Adam, point.
Hang on, you just said you like the upgrade
exactly.
cycle.
Exactly. Adam's just saying that's the upgrade
so
cycle.
Go out and get yourself an iPad 3.
Well, I don't need one necessarily right now.
An iPad, not a 3.
An iPad.
Not 3.
Oh, come on. It's going to go down in the history as a third iPad, isn't it?
Depends what they call the next one.
I don't care about history.
Well, they'll throw it. It'll be the iPad 13 or something. They'll do a Microsoft on us and go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 2011, 2012. You know how they do their versioning. Mm.
I can see why that they would go back to just iPad, though. Because otherwise we're going to be iPad 32, iPad 78, iPad whatever, where iPods are just iPods.
Yeah, well, it's the third generation, isn't it?
Yeah. You can say third-gen iPad, I reckon, and be pretty
safe in
that.
As opposed to iPad 3.
Yeah.
Well, technology journalists need a way to differentiate between the different models so they can compare them.
Not only that, it is an important thing, and it's something I've struck with in the iPod world, is that you need to very clearly differentiate the models when you're buying accessories.
Mm. Now, third generation, fourth generation.
Yeah. Mm. I got an iPod Classic, but there's two different iPod Classics, and they're slightly different sizes, so...
Mm.
Yeah, the name is important for that reason. There needs to be a way to be sure that you're talking about that one, that size and shape.
Mm. Maybe the name is just a way to sort of say, well, we can't end up being iPad 18.
So if it's
we have to stop somewhere.
Well, but you still need a way to distinguish models. If you're going to have 18 different versions, ultimately, you're going to have 18 different names because you're going to have 18 different cases to put them in or something like that.
And so, connectors and accessories and everything else.
I think iPad third generation would be a pretty good way to sum it up.
Mm, but it needs to be marked on the unit somewhere.
Yeah.
So that if you've got one in your hand and you're not, when there's five or six generations been out. Now, this one's called an iPad, but is it a first-generation iPad or is it a third-generation iPad? You need to be able to tell the difference
Most
without being
Apple
a nerd.
Most Apple devices have a little number on the back that gives you a description of what...
Do you want this?
Yes, I would, actually. Okay. My phone's
good
plugged
for radio.
In over
it's
there.
Plugged in.
Yeah, sorry.
is it flat?
Of what month it was made, what generation it is, and what... You know, there's little numbers on the back that give you all this information.
We might go off the air. Are we still on the air?
No, we're still on the air. just unplugging
we're not powered by Apple,
charger.
Ron. It's okay.
See, my iPhone is a model A1332, which means it was made in... Blah, 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 blah.
March 1932.
No, there's a whole bunch of other numbers after it. There's one number... Is it the... Oh, there's one of them I can't remember. Yeah, I can't actually see them. That's really great. I'm feeling really old right now. I can't read that.
And you've got your glasses on too.
There is a number on most iProducts that has a lot more information in it than you'd think.
But the accessory sites don't always make use of that.
Well, that's not Apple's fault.
And it's very, very confusing. No, well, even Apple's own site doesn't always make use of that.
Mm.
And it gets very, very confusing trying to buy accessories.
Yeah. We're going to have to make that a bit more obvious to people, I think.
Yeah. Or just give them a name, like iPad 3, for goodness sake.
Gareth in our chat room says, iPad 2S. I was speculating last week. I said it might be an iPad 2S.
Mm.
Or a 2GS.
Or a 2GS or something.
Wouldn't be 2G.
No.
No. We step backwards.
Warlock in our chat room says, MacBook is MacBook. Gareth says iPod Touch is iPod Touch. Elroy says Adam's trolling is getting pathetically transparent.
Yes. The other interesting thing, too, is that I think you and I, once again, I don't know how your memory's going again this evening, Ron. I'll try you on another one.
I'm not well. I'm not myself.
No, yeah. We were talking about how that I think Apple's done us all a favour with the high-speed or the mobile phone-connected iPad, because we don't have the high speeds of LTE on 700 meg in Australia like they do in the United States.
No, that's right. In this new model, they have included support for 4G LTE mobile telephone network.
Which is 700 and 2100 megahertz. So they're the frequencies.
They're the radio bands. That's
yeah,
right.
We don't have anything on LTE here. We're having 700 meg auctions in the not too distant, something may pop up there.
I think those two radio bands are aimed squarely at two very particular carriers in the United States. You can still use the device here on 4G and LTE, but you're going to have to use another piece of equipment as well. You're going to have to use a... the word that Graham hates, the dongle. You're going to have to use a little USB type modem.
A USB modem.
But just tether to your phone and use your plan.
It won't support a USB modem. It hasn't got a USB port on it.
Has it got a USB port?
No, it's only got one plug on the bottom.
Yeah, you have to do Wi-Fi to your Wi-Fi device.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what you do, the way we do it on our iPhone 1, was actually you just have a hotspot in the car, whether that be one of the carrier's hotspots or whether it be a device like a HTC or an iPhone. And you just tether it to that, and it'll save you $200 in the long run, and you'll still get whatever speeds your device and the network lets you have at the time where you are.
So save your money, you get a Wi-Fi-only version in Australia.
Not unless you've really got a good reason to buy a mobile phone version. Don't let them upsell you one of those, because then you've got to get another plan, and 2 years down the track, well, you're in the upgrade cycle, aren't you? Maybe that's what they want.
It's important to mention as well that this new iPad will work on Australian HSDPA networks and 3G networks, so...
It'll still work.
So, yeah, despite our recommendation, if you go for a mobile data network-enabled device instead of the Wi-Fi version, you'll still be able to use it on phone networks. You're just not going to get the 4G or LTE connectivity that you would in the United States.
Warlock said on the chat...
Warlock's getting a lot of mentions tonight.
Everymac.com/ultimate-mac-lookup is where you can put in the numbers that you found on the back of your iProduct and see what model number it is.
Everymac.com.
Yeah, he's just put up my phone. A link to my the number that I just quoted on the air.
Nice one, Warlock.
He's brought up mine was introduced June 7th, 2010. iPhone 4. It doesn't tell me which model I've got in terms of RAM.
Oh.
Jeez.
Do we really need to know this?
But that's cool.
Not relevant for accessories.
No.
Well, it's relevant for finding out what all these numbers in the back of your iDevice mean, and you can look up your iDevice by the number. And then figure it out from there.
My initial problem was identifying the exact model, so you know which accessories to buy, and the number of gigabytes isn't relevant for that.
Well, I did give only one of the numbers that were on the back of the thing, so maybe if you put in a bit more information.
No, what I'm saying is it doesn't matter. You don't need that more information. It's not relevant. It doesn't matter whether it's the 8, 16, or 32 gig version. It's still the same case.
No, that particular one doesn't matter. No.
Yeah.
They're
the same size for those different... Yeah.
Would you like some stats about the iPad 3 and its launch?
Go ahead.
Yep.
According to the Twitterverse, in general, the white noise that is Twitter, around about 1,000 tweets per minute have iPad tags and things like that in it. Now, when the iPad got launched...
Hang on, 1,000 tweets per minute?
Yep.
Is that all?
Yep.
Have the iPad tag?
Well, have iPad in it.
Well, they're mostly spam, iPad. Aren't they, trying to sell you iPads?
Well, maybe so, but that's just the white noise. It could be spam. You could be right.
Yeah.
Anyway, when the iPad got launched on the day at around about 10 a.m., well, it actually got launched at 10:33, but around 10 a.m., the tweets started to rise. They hit around about 2,000 tweets a minute with the speculation and people going, oh, I'm really excited about what's happening in San Francisco at the moment. And it peaked severely at around 10:23, where it went up to 10K, which is 10,000 tweets per minute.
Wow.
And it peaked a little bit over that, around about 11,000 at 10:41. And then it fell away back to its norm by about 12 p.m. So there you go. That's the Twitterverse and how it reacted with tweets in relation to, oh, look, it's the new iPad. I've got a graph here. I'll hold it up to the studio audience.
That graph looks like one of the coronal mass ejections we were talking about earlier in the program. Come and say it with me, everybody.
Coronal mass ejection. No, when you do mention iPads on Twitter, you do get the attention of a lot of bots.
A lot of bots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that there's probably multiplied by that. That's probably half the actual mentions and the rest are reactions to that reaction.
Okay. All right.
Reactionary.
While we're talking about phone networks and things, because everyone has a mobile phone, everyone has a... Everyone, according to the Australian Bureau of Statistics, has about 2 or 3 mobile phones based on our population, but that's another story. The 3 mobile phone network, I'm using my words carefully here because Graham will pull me up and say, well, all 3 of them. But the 3 mobile phone network, which was bought recently, many moons back, by VHA, Vodafone Hutchison Australia, when they merged, and all that, are finally roaming on the Vodafone network. Many, many years down the track.
The Vodafone 3G network.
Correct.
Yes.
Because traditionally it used to roam on Telstra. That's just why we ended up and started using it. Then Telstra went away and so did a lot of people off the 3 network. So it's taken them a long time. Why do you reckon? Anyone got any speculation on that? Is their computer systems a bit inadequate or were they just worlds apart when it came to their billing systems and their customer base and it just made it simple to... I don't know. It seems to take a long time for something so simple.
Well, it's not simple, though. That interconnectivity between mobile telephone networks is incredibly complicated. And being able to hand over from one cell site to another when you're in mid-conversation and being able to... I mean, it's hard enough to do it properly within one phone network, but being able to communicate between 2 completely separate phone networks and pass the necessary information backwards and forwards and do it seamlessly so that subscribers don't notice... No, it's not simple. It's very, very complex. So I'm not surprised it's taken them a long time to get it working well.
Okay.
So they've waited until now to actually announce this, to make this media release.
So while they're doing their tweaks too, some customers will still be roaming onto the Telstra NextG 2G network. Or should I say, that's a tautology, really, isn't it? They're 2 individual networks. But according to this release, Vodafone spokesman basically said phones and devices used by 3 subscribers would still roam onto Telstra NextG and 2G networks. So they're using both of those networks at the moment. So obviously they're doing that whilst they do the tweaks. And I think they've got 3 months to run before they turn it off. But I also know that I think the Telstra 2G network is decommissioned very, very shortly.
The writing's on the wall. Yeah,
because they'll be going to LTE, the new 4G, or the faster generation, stuff like that too. So
now, former Tech Talk panellist Mark Diggins, who pops in occasionally, which is nice for us.
He does. Mm. He's coming in very shortly to replace one of your...
I'm disappearing for a few weeks.
Yeah, you're having a big arm bender.
Having a boil lanced.
Ugh.
And I'll be off for...
he's not, really.
I know.
having a lance boiled. Now, Mark said... I think last New Year's Eve, he was in the city, and when everyone was struggling to try and get SMS messages through, MMSs, wishing everyone Happy New Year, he said, hey, if you've got an old-fashioned phone, come hop on the 2.5G network. It's really good. There's no congestion.
No one on it.
Everyone's getting messages through. Yeah, there's no one on it anymore.
Stick your SIM in your old handset.
That's right. Telstra's got this network there that's in place that not many people are on anymore, and it was working well.
Excellent. Hey, good tip, see? Good tip.
But won't be there for much longer.
No. Now, let's move our attention. We've done Telstra. Let's move to Optus. Optus, one of the whipping boys of the telco industry, the number 2 telco here in Australia. They've finally launched, and how long has it taken them to do this, a usage checking app for their subscribers so they can see how much... Well, this is one of theirs because you probably get third-party ones like you do with Telstra. And let's just say Telstra is pretty average when it comes to their usage devices.
Now, this is for data usage on your mobile phone plan. Is that right?
Yeah, it actually shows you your usage of MMS, SMS texts, content services, mobile call charges, SMS text messaging, how many, and the data that you've used, all in one nice, small, little application. Hello, Telstra, listen.
Is this for Android handsets, for Apple handsets, iPhones?
Pretty much.
Looks to be iPhone.
They're demonstrating it on the iPhone, on the Apple App Store type sort of thing.
Good.
But I'd say it would make sense to actually... cross-platform it if they've now got the smarts behind the network which allows this information to be pulled out, and hopefully it's relatively real time, because you don't want bill shock these days, do you?
No.
Well, then these apps are good, and I must admit they're few and far between natively from some of the other telcos. Not that I've looked in Vodafone or anything, although I think their website's pretty good, so there must be some apps out there, but a lot of third-party developers do these sort of things. They don't end up being provided by the actual telco themselves.
I was about to say they could do an Android app for the Android market, and then I thought, oh no, whoops, it's not called the Android market anymore.
Oh, what happened there?
Oh, Google, what are you doing? It's now the Google Play Shop or something.
Yeah. What?
Oh, they're on drugs. What's
that
wrong with them?
That sounds ridiculous.
What was wrong with Android market?
Is ridiculous.
Play Store.
Graham
Play Store.
Spoken.
Google Play.
But Play it's not Store. Just for playing, it's for apps as well, like, isn't it?
They're correct. They're,
yeah. I reckon this is part of their big privacy thing. Roll all their products into one, rename them and have a new privacy policy.
But it's not just games on there.
No.
No.
No, it's everything. But that's they've silly. Decided that it's going to be now the Play Shop. And everybody's shortcuts on
week.
Their Android phones just broke overnight.
Yep. No market.
No. No market. Everyone had to reinstall the new market application, which is now called Google Play. Google went to...
I can't even find it.
Graham can't even find it. I think there's a domain. It's Play Shop or Google Play or something.com. It was registered 10 years ago by some other mob that's got it. Now Google suddenly decided overnight, well, we better sue them and get the domain name because it's a bit awkward. We've launched this, but you haven't got a domain name for it. What are they thinking?
Did they not warn people before they were doing something like this?
No, they just did it. It just happened. Switch overnight.
Why would they warn
people? Just like Apple, they didn't warn people before they announce anything.
But Apple would not do this. There's not a chance in hell that Apple would just come and change the entire game like that.
Apple never warn anybody before they announce things either.
They make announcements about announcements.
Even developers.
They do
make announcements about announcements. So yeah, Google didn't even make an announcement about an announcement. They just announced this.
They just did it.
But there's a game change going on in the land of Google at the moment. I was having a chat to Lyd during the course of the week, and she was saying that there's all sorts of things going on, people moving sideways, people being overlooked. Because I think she said Larry's back in the scene now, so... And Eric's sort of, was got the play. You know, a lot of people didn't like Eric, but he got the job done. But now it's all sort of swings and roundabouts.
Well, obviously they want to appeal to younger people and incorporate the whole game store, games, online games thing happening on your mobile and raise the profile of that side of the business.
Yeah, but not everything's a game.
Well,
yeah.
That's just it.
What if you don't want to buy some play?
What if I don't want to play? I just want to download
work.
And install.
Work. We have a Google Work as well. Yeah. A different market.
Maybe they're onto that, Graham. Maybe this is just part one of the Secret Service rolling out the
news.
No,
segregation
I think it's just
of
a complete
the,
and utter fail to think things through.
Tech fail, Google. Huh?
It's a rooster up. Absolutely.
A complete rooster up.
That's terrible.
Speaking of roosters, just because it's an animal and Optus like using animals on their television campaigns.
Oh, that's a stretch. That poor segue.
That's Andrew, a good Anna Gray McColm.
That's a good Anna Corrin, if ever I've heard
one,
isn't it?
You heard it then. You stretched it so far.
Andrew is a graduate of the Anna Corrin School of Segways.
Majoring in puns.
See, I can't do this on the ABC because they're commercially... you can't say commercial brands, right?
Oh,
I see. But anyway, yes, Singtel. Optus are going to serve ads to mobile phones based on your location. Now, it was always on the cards to come, but Singtel has revealed its plans to serve these to people to reinvent themselves.
How?
That is Singtel.
Via text message? Or?
Well, that's a very good question. The telco, which encompasses local subsidiary Optus, has said that it bought mobile marketing firm Amobi for $321 million. Million US dollars, I'll get them in the right order, to underpin its advertising service. So I'm assuming that you will get either an SMS or an MMS directed to your phone when you walk past a certain location.
How do I opt out if I'm an Optus customer?
Wouldn't it state that legally you have the option of opting out? Aren't you? Isn't that part
of... To start with, I shouldn't have to opt out. I should have to opt in to get something like this in Australia. We don't live in a society in Australia where... things like this get thrust and imposed upon you and you have to opt out.
Maybe you'll get a cheaper phone plan with a non-opt-out option. So as you walk past the local supermarket or the local hardware shop or pizza parlor...
Yeah, well, that's fine. If I tick a box on my contract and I say, yes, I agree to that, no problems, but I don't want it suddenly hitting me by default and then having to go out of my way to do something to unsubscribe from all that sort of nonsense.
How'll it go if you walk past the Telstra shop?
And it'd say...
I wonder if they'll take them on board as an advertiser.
Look over to the left. I know what direction you're walking. Look, yes.
Yeah.
Pay no attention to that shop on the right.
Because it's quite funny. The other night I was loading up a Telstra app to see my usage, which was a free app from the Play site. And because it was a free app, there's advertising in there. So guess what ad came up on my Telstra app? Optus. Well done. So anyway, if you're an Optus customer, just watch out. You might find you'll get beep beep as you walk past the shop. Well, that'd be scary, wouldn't it? Wonder how they'll do that. It'd be a combination of GPS and network connectivity, I would imagine, wouldn't it? To be accurate,
it wouldn't be GPS because that'd be too reliant on whether people had that location services turned on their phone.
So it's really going
to
be cell-based.
It would have to be on cell sites and cell tower information. Yeah.
So they do have the technology to do that.
Oh, of course they do. Yeah, but it's that's too horrendous to consider. I'd hate to think that it's...
Why don't they use their services for good rather than evil? You know, like helping search and rescue people and find my phone things, you know, so that...
Because there's no money in it.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, I guess. And also...
There's also no money in the Play Store. Boom, boom.
Well, yeah. Also, remember a while back Optus had the Think Big ads where roosters went through time thing and it went kaboom, speed of sound barriers. No, it wasn't a rooster, it was an ostrich. And they were talking about having great internet coverage and speeds and stuff like that. And then they got done for misleading advertising.
Yep.
Optus has won a partial reprieve from its $5.26 million fine that was handed down by the federal court. Instead, it's only going to cop a mere $3.61 million for running misleading ads about its cable and ADSL broadband plans in 2010.
So did Optus appeal the penalty?
The full bench of judges found Optus was still liable for the advertisements, which did not clearly indicate key aspects of the broadband plans. But the presiding judges, Mr. Keane, Mr. Finn and Mr. Gilmore, did not take quite as a severe view of Optus in the online contraventions in handing down its penalties. So they don't think they crossed the line as much as
Didn't they use a word like supersonic?
Yeah,
or something that got them in a bit of hot water?
They did. Mm. I remember supersonic was one of their words.
Supersonic, was it?
Yeah.
It made it sound like it was some new type of broadband something like that.
That's it. Optus was found in both the initial and appeal cases to have misled customers with its 2010 Think Bigger and Supersonic broadband advertisements, which did not adequately notify customers of their broadband service would be throttled during both on-peak and off-peak times. Now, do you remember that? That was where...
Yeah, I do.
I think one of their defences was that, we tell all the customers that at the point of sale where they sign up. And I think the legal system said, we don't think you do. So, and that's why they, misleading all the way. So anyway, that's all the telco news for this week. A lot of telco news, if nothing else. If nothing else indeed. So anyway, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. I think it's time to go and get a glass of water, have a break and come back with more of this wonderful show after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
I'm watching less and less free-to-air television. It's just atrocious.
I just with the Chaser, we're back on it.
Sad state of affairs when you're looking at the Chaser for cents.
And three-day shooting first.
Start me on that.
You used to make mixtapes. You'd have a blank cassette.
I did discover a workaround.
For three-day shooting first?
No. You can get the squirty one.
Ew.
I think fault's on both sides.
Yeah, a little turned on right now.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
Ah, yes, you are. We're back. Hello, everybody. The final stages of tonight's show, today's show, should I say?
The death throes.
No, it's not. We've got the Oddspot gadget and website of the week coming up. Now, you teased a really good gadget?
Yes, yeah. Clever gadget.
Anything about it, so I'm quite looking forward to that.
Yes.
Do we need to leave lots of time for it, or is it a quickie?
No, we can leave a little bit of time, I think.
We should talk about it.
We can take our time. It is. It's very interesting.
Should we talk about Lulzsec? We talked about it during the break, so we probably should talk about it now on the radio, shouldn't we?
Don't upset them, for goodness sake.
No, we'll stick to the facts.
Okay.
Stick to
the facts, ma'am.
Lulzsec hacker, Sabu, has been unmasked by the FBI. He was a 28-year-old New York man named Hector Xavier Monsieur. We had this discussion. I don't know whether we're pronouncing that correctly.
No.
Spelt M-O-S-E-G. We'll call him Hector from now on, okay?
Hector?
Okay, Hector. Now, Hector allegedly was a core member of the...
Better get a lawyer, son.
Yes. Yeah, in the American precinct of New York,
yes,
too. Yeah. I've seen crime shows like this, haven't I? Mm. Anyway, to cut a long story short...
Make a short story long.
Do you mind if I... Can you just carry on for a sec?
Certainly.
Ooh.
Andrew's pressed his cough button.
Sorry, I had to clear my throat there for a moment.
frog in there. Hector, you're saying Monsieur.
Yeah, is that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay. Hector, allegedly a core member of the hacking group which attacked several major sites last year, faces the prospect of 124 years in prison after his secret arrest and guilty plea in the US court in August. Now, you were saying, I think, Dr. Ryan, that unlike the Australian legal system, the American legal system differs in the fact that here we serve sentences concurrently.
That's right.
That is that you have a sentence if you've been a naughty boy, and if you did a couple of crimes, you get them all
together.
You're
sentenced to 18 years for this, and 18 years for this, and 18 years for this,
yep.
So you'll serve 18 years. yeah. were served concurrently. In America, they're served cumulatively.
Ah, so therefore that 18 it becomes 18 plus 18 plus 18 plus
Correct.
18. Hence, you can have 124
years. 124
years
imprisonment. Had he not pled guilty, he probably would have got like something like 160 years. So it's lucky he pled guilty.
Can you explain in what way that's worse?
I cannot. No, I'm not an expert in legal matters.
Line on the left, one cross
here
edge.
By any means, let alone in the United States.
Crucifixion.
Crucifixion.
Line on
yes,
the left.
First offence.
Yeah.
So yes, that's interesting.
Anyway, what happened was basically he dropped his guard. We're assuming it was him, but what happened is in Britain. There was a scenario where they had a website, lulzwhateveritwas.com.
Lulz, oh yeah.
And anyway, what happened was the authorities were monitoring said website in a said cloud hosting arrangement, and somebody forgot to put the virtual private network on in the group. Which
so their real-world IP address was
correct, because normally they routed through VPNs in different countries
to make it difficult to track.
Yeah, so the authorities would come up in a, you know, oh, that came from Russia or China or America or wherever it was like that, and it would change all the time. But anyway, the telltale sign that stuck out for them in the logs was a British IP address. And let's just say that there's no such thing as being able to hide that well on the internet until you drop your guard like that. So, yes, that's how all that sort of has seemed to have been coming down. So we might see more of that now.
So who made the arrest? What who was which agency was investigating this? Do we know? Was it the
it was
FBI?
The FBI. Yeah. The sign up, which was for Cloudflare. Hang on, let me go back a bit. The group signed up for a free account with Cloudflare, a service that optimizes the speed of websites and mitigates attacks leveled against them. The sign up occurred within hours of a hack of the US news service PBS, where Lulz posted a fake story. Anyway, during the 25 days that it had this Cloudflare, a lone British IP address was recorded logging into the website. The IP stood out for obvious reasons that we've just mentioned, and that's how it went from there on in, really. So the FBI, obviously there's been a bit of work with other countries as well, but yeah, maybe this might be Lulz's undoing, purely because we didn't turn the VPN on. Whoops.
Was the FBI's website then brought down by an unprecedented denial of service attack?
No, they did that prior to that, didn't they? That was the copyright
They've
thing.
They've done that in the past.
That was No. That was the freedom...
Oh, the pirate ship people.
No. Just recently. I'm trying to think of what they called it. I've got a mental blank. But yes, it was the bill that was going through the American House.
SOPA.
And what,
Stop
that's
Online
the one,
Piracy
SOPA,
Act.
Yes. Yes, that was the one. They took out the FBI, I think, on that occasion. Then they took out Universal Music in one foul swoop. So I think if I'm getting my stories right, that was how it all sort
they
of happened.
They took their placeholder pages. They didn't take down the FBI.
And put a placeholder page back
they
soon.
Took they took down yeah. the FBI.
They did not take down the FBI. Just like to clarify that one. They messed with one website they had.
Tens of thousands of special agents all around the world.
Yeah, they're all gone.
Were silenced.
Yeah. Mulder and Scully could no longer log in.
Is that right?
Yeah. Good. All right. While we're on the subject of United States government, they've deployed Chrome. They've got rid of IE6. See, it's not just us over here,
oh,
Dr.
Good.
Ron.
That's good.
That,
pleased to hear that.
That have IE6 on PCs and...
IE8 now.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, the U.S. Department of State has rolled out Chrome to 60% of its 100,000-plus desktop
Ooh.
Fleet. So they've gone
That's a good way to go.
From Microsoft.
Yeah. Chrome is a good way to go.
Yeah.
Graham's a convert to Chrome. He loves it, don't you, says he?
Yes.
Looking? Yeah.
Yes.
What's so good about it compared to others on the market, Chrome? That
it gets out of the way and does the job.
No frills.
Yep. No frills.
Is it lightweight?
Yep. It is.
Because that was where Firefox was good up until a while back. Then it got so heavy and bloated up.
And toolbars everywhere and, you know, half a dozen apps that did, or what are they called? Add-on things?
Plugins,
yep. Everybody wanted to install. I never wanted to install all that stuff. So, yep, just Chrome just gets out of the way, gives me tabs and an address bar and the site and nothing else.
I like that too.
Yeah.
I tried to do something dumb the other day and it didn't work.
Right. Well, that's probably good then, isn't it?
Cool.
What did you try to do?
I had Internet Explorer open because I was looking at a website that frustratingly would only work with Internet Explorer.
We all have those, and I have Internet Explorer here as well.
Yes.
For those sorts of
you
things.
Have to, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I
don't.
No, you don't.
I don't have to, but yes.
Safari woman.
No, but I don't try and help people fix their computers, so that's why.
I used Safari for the second time in my life last Monday.
Did you?
How I communicated with the show, because I had an Apple device.
I also had Google Chrome open.
Yes.
And I unwittingly tried to tear off a tab from IE and drop dock it, into Chrome.
Yep.
Did it?
No, it didn't work at all.
No, it won't work.
You've obviously tried, have you?
Well, that's just my work.
I did try, though. As soon as I let go of the button, I thought, what if this does work? The whole universe is going to explode. Thankfully, it didn't work, actually, in hindsight. No. It was a silly thing to try and do.
You could have ruined us all.
I could have, yes.
We're worried about solar flares, and here I am messing around with IE
trying to rip
and
tabs off IE and drag them into Chrome.
Oof.
Never in a pink fit. In other news, the Bendigo Bank mandates a daily desktop shutdown. Now, you would have thought that a lot of organisations would turn off their client machines before they go home, but apparently I'm quite mistaken
by that.
Do you
mean staff? So it wants the staff members to shut down their computers at night?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Do you wander off at home and leave your computers on?
Yep, Windows L and walk away.
I leave it to back up before I go to bed. Mm.
Yeah,
time machine.
The organisations where I help look after the computers, it's much more common now to encourage users to log out and leave the computer on. And there's two reasons for this, at least. One is that the machines will load updates and things overnight.
Mm.
And two is that users can use the VPN to remote desktop to their machines if they want to do work from home or from out of the office.
They're two very good reasons.
Particularly if they're travelling interstate or whatever, they can connect the VPN RDP to their very own machine and have all their stuff there, including local databases that don't operate very well over the VPN.
Has the Bendigo Bank said why it recommends its staff turn their computers
off? Yeah, it's the Bendigo Bank and the Adelaide Bank, both of those together, and they've credited new desktop power management software for saving them more than $41,000 off its power bill in the 4 months to January.
So that makes $41,000 in a microsecond.
No, that's Telstra you're thinking of. In SMS.
No, this is a bank we're talking about. Yeah.
Sorry, they save.
I think it saves power.
$40,000.
$40,000 off their power bill by shutting off their.
In how long?
In a quarter.
$40,000 a quarter. That's nothing.
It's nothing.
Think of the productivity that's hurt by you having to wait for updates.
There you go.
How much does that cost?
That's $400 billion in staff productivity.
Mm.
So they thought it was a good idea at the time, huh?
Mm. Didn't ask anyone.
There's probably
about
Bendigo
it.
Bank people cringing as we speak.
Low power use PCs these days, they'll spin down the hard disk, they'll turn off the monitor, they'll really bunker down into a very low power usage mode.
How low are we talking? Are we talking just like 10 watts or something like that?
Well, we're talking an organisation the size of a bank only saving $40,000 a quarter in power, which is nothing to them.
Mm.
That's, we're talking quite low power. And as you say, the productivity gains. Otherwise, I mean, you pay for power to keep the computers on overnight. Sure, that's an expense.
What about the other?
But you're paying staff to sit there while the computer's got a little hourglass on the screen when they try to log in because it's trying to load updates at the same time.
It's the business equivalent of switching to the cheap and nasty toilet paper.
Yeah, it's
that's it all they're
makes,
doing.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
They're just being cheap.
They've also come along the lines of being a good citizen in global greenhouse carbon emissions. Oh, the horse is back again.
I'm unhappy with the green movement at the moment.
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
What's the environment ever done for us?
Absolutely.
Wow. In my new house,
that's what I want to know.
There's energy-saving bulbs everywhere. Those ones that take forever to load up, they go really dark.
Oh, I hate
and they
those
get
ones. Yeah, there are better ones than that around. There are ones that start up much better these
days.
They
had them in the pantry.
Yeah.
When you turn the light on in the pantry, you need it straight away. I need it right now. I don't have half an hour. I'm angry about it. I am. I need my whip. So we put LEDs in there instead.
Well, that's good.
Which is the real energy-saving option.
They'll be more energy efficient.
Exactly.
And they'll be instant on.
LEDs are quite expensive too.
Yeah, but
in the long run.
It's worth it because I don't have to change it for 10 years or something. So.
No, you probably move by then.
No, I'm never moving again.
Okay, good.
No,
I'm not. You've been there, done that.
Oh, I'm never moving again.
They'll be cutting it out in a pine box.
They will.
Oh, they won't have to go far.
No, they will. They'll be removing me like that because I'm just never moving again.
All right.
And all the water tank, Bizzo. Oh, just had it up to here with the green movement.
The water tank. Well, what's happened with your water tank?
Well, the entire backyard relies on the tank for its water. There's no mains water in the entire backyard.
Oh, yes.
Infuriating, especially when they've...
It's been raining. There's plenty of water in the tank.
Especially when they've left the tap open on the pump, which means that the tank is not collecting water. It's just running out through the pump because they think, well, the pump's not turned on, so therefore it's not losing water. Turns out it is. Genius. You have to turn it all off.
We just run the garden hose from the front into the tank, don't you? Isn't that what you do?
I'm tempted, but then it'll cost me lots and lots and lots of money.
You need a friendly
water.
Plumber that can just run the fire hydrant from out you the street into your back tank.
Run the garden hose from next door's front.
There you go. Graham's got the right idea.
That'll make a great impression on the new neighbours, yeah.
Well, no. You do it at 4 a.m. when they're not watching, of course.
No, it's just...
She does her best work at 4 a.m.
power-saving thing, fine, but don't inconvenience me in any way.
Okay, fine.
I'll save the environment if I'm not put out at all.
It's rained quite a bit recently, right across the eastern seaboard, if you hadn't noticed. Poor old Perth frying. Hello, Perthverts. Got emails over that too.
Or Perthlings.
Perthlings. That's
greetings,
right.
Perthlings.
Very hot and frazzly over there, and over here we're hot and sticky.
Places underwater. Absolutely. And all sorts of most stuff of going on. And Lena's complaining that she hasn't got water in a tank. Oh, yeah. Poor diddums.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can I talk about Microsoft?
Please. Do.
Yeah. Microsoft settled over an Aussie investment patent. Apparently some Aussie guy.
Didn't even try and segue that one.
No, I didn't.
No.
I couldn't draw parallels to the environment. Spend, yes. You wouldn't know the half. Anyway, an Australian inventor behind an 8-year-old patent battle with Microsoft has welcomed the software giant settlement with the Singapore company that he founded. Now, this gentleman allegedly built a lot of the handshaking that goes on for doing updates and things like that. And he had patents and stuff like that. So, which I thought was quite interesting. It was alleged that the software giant has infringed the patent number, and they go and give the details, in developing its product activation systems. You know, when it does a handshake and says, hi, you're legit, and I'll let you open up, and please restart me, and it'll work.
Yep, yeah, copy and paste your key in.
An Aussie built that.
Click activate.
An Aussie patented that. That's good. See?
Go, Aussie, go.
Some brains that didn't go offshore, the brain drain, they call it, and do all that sort of stuff. So,
well, hang on. His company is in Singapore, and it's just been paid out by Microsoft. So,
okay, you win.
A technicality.
It is
surely?
A technicality, but he's an Aussie.
Mm.
Anyway. And finally today, before we conclude, trains that run across vast land tracks in this country.
Vast tracks of land.
Yes. The government-owned operator of Australia's freight rail network has started replacing the dismantled communication systems used 704 privately owned trains, and it had all the radios in them to communicate backwards and forwards across some of the vast parts of Australia.
That's right.
Telstra have stepped up to the mark, and they've put mobile phone network right across. I think it's the Nullarbor now. So there's no dead patches.
That's good.
Well, hopefully that's good. The way it sort of... I'm sure you'll be able to use your phone. Nick, you're a train enthusiast, Dr.
I am.
You've done the Indian Pacific.
It is the Indian Pacific all the way from Sydney to Perth.
Yeah.
And I picked up the Indian Pacific in Adelaide. I went from Adelaide to Perth.
Okay.
Did you do 3 days and 2 nights in a train.
Really?
Hmm.
Okay.
It's a lot of fun.
I did it in a car. All I needed was a brick.
You do know they have aeroplanes now. You can do that trip in 3 hours.
Into Perth?
No, it's six.
Not into Perth.
Oh.
They have planes in Perth?
4 hours.
Yes, they have planes in Perth.
You normally have lovely things to say about Perth.
Perth is a lovely city.
Emails again, Dr. Ron.
Perth is the city I would choose to live in if I had to live somewhere other than Melbourne.
Exactly.
It's very, very nice.
I've heard you say that before.
It is hot. It's warm.
Mm.
Very warm over there. Look, this is good news.
It's more South African than it is Australian, though, isn't it?
It is. It's closer to closer to
Johannesburg than Sydney.
Yeah, than Sydney. This is good news. Now, they used to just have normal conventional radios in all the trains, I think, to control them. And so now Telstra, as you say, stepped up to the mark. They've said, we'll put cell sites in along the line and you'll be able to communicate via your mobile, using mobile telephone technology, not necessarily mobile phones themselves, but that's sort of technology.
Yeah, the project required Telstra to build 88 new mobile phone towers specifically for the project to fill the black spots along the 10,000 kilometres of track operated by this particular company. That's a lot of train track. They did well with 88 towers over 10K of railway line.
They've done very well. Indeed.
They must have had quite a bit out there already, so...
I think a lot of the signalling systems and stuff out in the bush there are actually, they use those sorts of networks to control them. I don't think they have...
Yeah, that's an interesting point. How do they control signalling? Do they don't sort of phone ahead and say, hey, Bert, can you put the signal to red at It's a Duna or
no,
something.
No, they pull the lever, pull the lever grain from pull in Adelaide and hope that the signal falls somewhere 1,200 kilometres down the line.
Doesn't work that way?
Not anymore. No. The other thing I was going to mention for as an aside, for people listening outside of Australia, you might not know this, but that section of train line between Adelaide and Perth has got the longest...
Straight stretch?
Straight stretch of railway track in the world. There are no bends in the railway line for, and I'm going to tell you, I'm just wikiing it frantically, it's hundreds of kilometres. It's just a completely straight section of train track.
Who would you be being the engine driver on that?
They have a special vigilance control, so they have to actually tell the train that they're still awake.
Yeah, every 10 minutes or something.
I think it's more frequent than that.
Oh, really?
Mm. Because otherwise, that's the danger, that the train driver could... Something could happen. They could have a medical emergency or something. The train would just keep going for days, and there would be no driver.
So every 5 minutes...
Why does it need a driver?
They've got a... Well, that's an excellent question, and I'll answer that in a sec, Graham.
There's nothing out there.
Otherwise, the brakes are applied and the train stops answer Lena's question.
So, but going so often, so something annoys you every 5 minutes while you're driving.
Yeah, but
when that gets so boring, you fall asleep?
Well, if you do, the train stops.
Oh.
And a little light but will flash or a bell will ring and you just have to hit a button. It's
I know for a fact
control.
That I can hit snooze on my alarm clock in my sleep without waking up.
Can you do it for three?
So,
can do it for 3 days.
Graham, don't apply to any jobs for the railways, okay?
And to answer Graham's question, I did see, why do you need a driver at all? That's an excellent question. I saw an article completely unrelated here to the Indian Pacific. But it was during the week, and it was about coal trains, I think also in the Pilbara region.
Yeah.
And they're looking at introducing driverless trains. So the trains will run over hundreds of kilometres of track.
With people, as in like passengers,
coal,
or just so freight?
Coal or freight.
Yeah.
Or from the mines, iron ore from the mines. And they won't have a driver. They'll be controlled by an operator in a control room somewhere.
Well, surely that's a job a machine can do just as well these days. You can have forward-looking radar. You can have forward-looking infrared. You can very, very easily detect whether the line is clear ahead. You can detect the rails. It's a job that wouldn't be too hard to expect a machine to do.
Indeed. And that's what they're looking at doing. And they're assuring drivers that it's okay, your jobs will be safe. We'll get you to do something else. Don't worry. You know, you'll still have a job.
Well,
surely
there's something better for a person with a brain can do than sitting there when doing a brain-numbing job
playing
of
games.
Watching two rails go past.
Mm.
Give them an iPad and like, Angry Birds.
It'd be like R2-D2 in an X-Wing fighter, really, wouldn't it? Oh, back after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
The Big T announced its prices for the national broadband network.
Ah!
And that's a risk you have to be aware of and you have to be prepared to take.
So you've unnecessarily highlighted that awkward part of the conversation.
DLC stands for downloadable content.
Yeah, that's what it gives you if you've already got the toolbar.
I want a portal gun.
I want a portal gun.
Telstra need to take more safeguards so that one piece of equipment can't take down a network.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! Interesting!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
This week's gadget, the JUC400 wormhole switch.
What?
Oh, I like it already.
I'll give you a website to have a quick look at, and you can have a look. J5create.com. J5create.com. Go there and click on wormhole switch. This provides the latest in mobile computing technology. It's a simple-to-use USB to USB wormhole cable. It's got two main functions. It allows you to copy and share data, photos, music, other files between two computers instantly, drag and drop from one console to another.
Ooh.
Ooh.
But wait, there's more. You can use the keyboard and mouse from one computer to work on the second. So why is this important? Imagine having the ability to use a full-size PC keyboard and mouse on your small laptop or tablet.
Handy.
The wormhole is great for sharing files with family and friends or between your own devices. Watch the video, watch the video, watch the video. You'll get the hang of it straight away.
I'm just doing the thing in my mind. Does this cost anything? Because it sounds good to be true.
Yes, you can buy them from that website, j5create.com. If you have a look at the video, they've got like a MacBook Pro beside a PC-type laptop, and they're dragging and dropping stuff across the desktops.
Wow.
Very, very clever.
Cool.
That's our gadget of the week, Andrew, the JUC400 wormhole switch.
Here it is, everybody, the world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
It does sound awesome, Warlock. Thank you, Warlock, for the contribution of the gadget. He alerted me to that.
Oh, well done, Warlock. Yes. Yeah, send him through if you've got him. You can do him on the webpage.
Done a good job. This week's website, thank you, Michael, for this week's contribution. How big's the universe?
All of it.
People have been expelled from school for asking those questions.
How big's the universe compared to the size of an electron? Do you want to know?
I think the correct answer is very big.
Very big.
Yeah.
The website is...
It's a long way to the corner shop, but that's nothing compared to the... Yeah.
The website is htwins.net, htwins.net/scale2. Actually, the whole htwins.net website is quite interesting, but have a look at the scale 2 demonstration. Hi all, says Michael. This website gives a little perspective of scale, from Sheldon's string theory, 10 to the power of minus 36, to the size of the known universe, 10 to the power of 27, and everything in between. There are some notable scales along the way, such as the light year, AM and FM wavelengths, the smallest thing visible under an electron microscope, and even the distance Voyager has travelled in total. This requires flash, this website, but it's very, very clever and very well done. You can use your little scrolly wheel thing on your mouse to zoom in and out, or you can use the slider control across the bottom. It's taking us a short moment in time to load up on the panellists' computers here, but they'll be very impressed when they click the start button, as Graham is about to do.
Oh, okay, he's doing it in real time. Yep, I can't see from the side panel.
Yep. Now you can click that, use that little slidey control, Graham. You can keep sliding in, sliding out, keep going out, keep going out, keep going in, keep going in.
This is good for radio, boys.
It's great.
Oh, it's fantastic.
It's very well done. That's our website, Andrew.
That's so cool.
htwins.net/scale2.
Tech Talk Radio, app of the week.
This week's application was Andrew alerted me to this one. Telstra's Online Text Buddy. For the PC.
I thought that was pretty cool. This has been around for a long time, according to tweets that we got.
Yes, and a long-time friend of the panel, Grant, says it's been around for a long time. Just a bit of a closely guarded secret.
It is. But I discovered it because I needed something to... Well, you tell us what it is first.
It's a little app for Telstra mobile customers. It lets you send a text message to any telephone service from the comfort of your own PC. You can send but not receive.
It's one way.
Yeah, if someone replies, you'll get the reply on your mobile phone. Messages are charged to your account as part of your plan, and let me tell you, it's fast.
It is, and it works really well, because I had a mobile broadband plan, which they gave me $40 worth of free text. I said, well, I'm not going to give up $40 lightly, especially to that carrier. So I went on a search, and I found a device which let me do texts and bill it back to that account.
Spamming people from your PC.
Yeah, absolutely. Really good.
That's our app, Andrew. Telstra's Online Text Buddy.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
My, the meatloaf!
Bomb. James Bomb.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Do you switch off your mobile telephone when you go to the cinema?
No. I turn on silent.
Do you put it on mute?
Yep.
Do you put it in flight mode?
Yes. No. Sometimes.
The Pacific nation of Papua New Guinea has opened its only cinema complex. The patrons have been warned not to spit betel nut on the floor. They are kindly asked to switch off their mobile phones and leave grenades and handguns outside.
Aww.
The Paradise Cinema is a 3-theatre complex and is the first to open in the Commonwealth country's crime-ridden
capital. I love the optimistic name.
Paradise Cinema. We got nothing to worry about in this country, have we?
Well, I don't know. I went to the Astor Theatre the other night, and I tell you what, if I'd taken my mobile phone out of my pocket there, I might have been shot and had a grenade thrown at me.
Cinema goers have to pass a metal detector, and a sign says mobile phones must be switched off, and weapons of any kind, including guns, knives, sharp objects, grenades, etc., are not allowed inside cinema premises.
Must be a doozy of a cloakroom.
A spokesman for the cinema said, we want to maintain standards, so that's the benchmark, so people know what to expect.
And that's the Odd Spot.
That's the Odd Spot, Andrew.
Where do you find those? And that's the show for this week.
I've told you how I find them.
Yes. Are you with us next week?
I'll be with you next week.
Fantastic. All right.
As always, I'm welcome back.
Of course. Thank you, Linesman. Thank you, Ball Boys. It's been great this evening. Full contingency. We're back on deck. When we push the buttons almost nearly the right way.
And right. Yes, we will be attempting to give Andrew another English lesson at the end of the show.
Correct. That's what you do every night. Until next week, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis.
Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the two-hour version or access the one-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03-8682-9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter. Join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.